ladies and gentlemen, we're shoveling in the shade, which is actually kind of nice, to tell you the truth. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. I'm Matt, the producer, a.k.a. Matt McFarland, and joined, as usual, by my parents, Jack and Lynn, a.k.a. John Francis and Lynn Marie. Mom and Dad, how are you guys doing today?
You know what, Matt? With this patio and everything completely exhausted, and talking about cooling off in the shade, that sure is in the area where the patio is located.
No kidding. Mom?
I'm doing great. Yes, it's kind of nice to have a day off from working on the patio and just taking it easy and doing a show.
For our listeners that haven't been keeping score, the growing season is currently on site. There was a promise made at the beginning of the landscape season that Jack and Lynn McFarland would have a patio built, and that turned into a patio, and then underneath a porch, and then a full-blown walkway, and then rock work. It's just been an absolute takeover. It's been about 10, 11 days of just insane construction on site, and we're nearing the end. The instant the truck shows up on site with 4 yards of topsoil, you know that you're getting close to the end. That's kind of the signal that things are starting to wrap up. Today, though, we're going to be talking about shade. In fact, we're dubbing the show Made in the Shade. And one of the reasons why is on a number of consults lately, I've been subject to many questions from clients and prospective clients that have asked, well, what do I do? Because my yard is predominantly shade. And shade is a very, very interesting horticultural situation in that the amount of plant material that you can plant that would provide color in a shade environment drastically is reduced compared to a sun environment. Now, there are things that you're able to do to get color and four-season interest into an environment like this, and we're going to chat about all of those things on the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. I'm Matt, she's Lynn, he's Jack. On the other side of it, how do we talk about planting in shade? What the heck is this? What are the challenges? All that and more. Listen in. And we're back. Growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. Follow along with us, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on Show Bits. It's the visual accompaniment to the show. And my guess is that you're going to want to be using the visual accompaniment for this because we are going to be calling out names of plants for you fast and furious. And I'm not talking about the movies with Vin Diesel in them. We're going to be talking about all manner of plants that you can use in an environment that is predominantly shady. She's Lynn, he's Jack, I'm Matt. We are the McFarlands, the stewards of the growing season. Guys, I got to tell you, the number one question that I've been getting on sites lately is, what do I do with this backyard that is full shade? And I'm talking pops. There was one consult that I did a few weeks back. Dad, there was parts of this backyard at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that were nighttime. I'm talking that much shade. I am talking if you had a solar light charging out in the middle of this backyard all day and you walked this solar light over to the area that I'm speaking about, it would turn on that much dark. It was crazy.
You know what, Matt? The darkest I've ever seen it was when we were in California and we were walking under the redwoods, and it was in 2 o'clock in the afternoon and it was that dark.
Wow. No, it's...
I know what.
And
it's,
you know,
tricky, Matt.
Yeah, it's very, very tricky. This is one of the ones where you really have to know your stuff. This is one, listen, if you pull up to a regular subdivision lot, your typical subdivision lot across the GTA, I would say 7.5 times out of 10, you're going to be encountering at least partial sun, if not full sun. And the array of plant materials or the number of arrows in your quiver for a full sun location are vastly, vastly, vastly more than the number of arrows in your quiver if you're dealing with a shade location. Generally, if you're dealing with a shade location, it's either in a more of a country setting or an older neighborhood that has got mature trees that have grown to an elevation that would provide full shade. So it's very...
Wait. I don't know if I agree with that 100%.
Okay, go. What's up?
Okay, so I would say that in my case, I would think that shade is because of overhangs from people's homes, and then the sun keeps moving around, and you could have it on the one side of the house or on the other, whatever.
Yep.
It could also be things like sheds and so forth. But it's also, like you said, trees. But it could even be something as simple, Matt, as shrubs in your bed that cast shade on various plants, or even a branch that comes across and will also cast shade. So I think it's more than just what you had said, Matt, sorry.
And Dad brings up a wonderful point. I recently was on a site for a different consult. In fact, the consult business has been exceedingly brisk lately. I'm lining up work for next spring, and it's appearing that it's going to be absolutely bonkers. For more on that, growingseasoncanada.com, click on TGS Tiny Gardens. But the point is that this is how we treat or our thoughts on making a lot out of a little space. Many times that we're on site with clients, they're like, yeah, my backyard isn't that big. We can't really do much. And that is not true. It would be a crock of, we can do a whole bunch with your little space. And I was recently on a site, and as my dad was talking about overhangs from houses, dad, typical subdivision or newer subdivision area where the houses are like, let's say 4 feet apart, and you're dealing with the overhang coming off of a roof, plus the overhang coming off of a cantilevered porch, plus the overhang coming off of the neighbor's roof, plus the overhang coming off of the neighbor's cantilevered porch. It was insane. So literally the amount of sun that you get would be 3 hours when that ball of gas, AKA the sun, not my mom, is, you know, threading the needle.
Thanks.
Right? It's seriously. So the client was like, well, they have cedars in this area. And they said, well, why did the cedars die? So, well, first of all, you're planted close to, too close to the house. Secondly, you're underneath two overhangs. So you're dealing with not only shade, you're also dealing with drought, which is just, you're talking strike one, strike two already, right?
Well, sure, man. And in the end, cedars are, I would consider putting into partial shade. But I think in this case, Matt, maybe mom should hit what is the definition of, say, full shade and partial shade.
Now, mom, this all just has to do with the amount of sunlight, correct?
Yes, it does. Now, there are plants out there that can survive in full shade, and they define full shade as 3 hours or less of direct sunlight.
Really?
Yep, yep. Then they go on to define partial shade. It means that the plant needs 3 to 6 hours of direct sun per day.
Okay. Wow, so there really is not...
Wait a minute, Matt. Yeah. So one thing that's really super important is with the partial shade bit is that they should basically be getting afternoon shade. Okay, they're talking about they want to have the plants somewhat, either through dappled sunlight or so forth, but they generally say they want some sort of a indirect light in the afternoon to protect the plants in the heat of the day. That's really important.
Because these plants aren't set up to take direct sunlight. But then now they define full sun as at least 6 hours per day, and then you get to your vegetables. And to get your best vegetable growth, they need 8 to 10 hours a day.
Wow, that is a lot of sunlight. Here's an interesting story. I did another consult. Again, as I said, consults are busy. And I had a client that said, well, how come their vegetables didn't do well this year? Well, first of all, you run your hand through their vegetable garden and the soil was literally, it was as if it never had water. But secondly, their backyard is in dense shade. The only spot that the sun would give you even close to your 8 hours was probably 15 to 20 feet away from where they had decided to put their vegetable garden. Now, not any knock against them because they put their veggie garden right off their deck. They're young parents, and I guess it's probably easier to have your veggies right off the corner of your deck when you got like a little one. Let's say you leave the little one in the playpen for 3 minutes to go out and grab a couple carrots out of the vegetable garden. But this was not the right place for it because their backyard has dense shade. So now hearing that these veggies need 8 hours plus, holy cow, that's insane.
Do you know what, Matt? I found that that's why when we're doing projects and we keep talking to our, you know, our various clients, our customers, even now our listeners, about microclimates, that's why it becomes so important, right?
I agree. And for our audience that doesn't know, a microclimate basically means, let's say your backyard gets pretty much afternoon sun. Okay? So you would expect that the majority of the backyard would be roughly exposed to a similar temperature and a similar illumination. Well, not entirely true. Let's say you've got a deck and that deck has a railing on it. And then above that deck, you've got your two-story house. And so that on that story house, you have a minimum of a 12 to 18 inch overhang that cantilevers off of your roof for your eaves troughs and such. Well, a plant planted in the corner where the deck meets that house, you could be dealing with A, temperatures vastly different than, say, if there was a plant planted 15 to 20 feet out from that area, as well as...
How vastly different?
Probably within 15 degrees difference as far as temperature.
That's right, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, and two, you could be dealing with completely different shade light conditions. So it's just something to consider. So when my dad talks about microclimates, there's been many times on sites where we'll plant something somewhere and it's like, yeah, but wait a second, why isn't it blooming nearly as much as it should be? And then you begin to watch and it's like, yeah, well, I remember, Dad, there was a certain site in the early millennium and we planted something in a certain spot and you look at it, okay, so that has to be full sun. And then you begin to watch and just by how the sun creeps over the house, that's not full sun. It was partial sun at best. And even, you know, you walk onto a customer site, you walk onto a customer site for a consult and you're looking at it. And actually, whenever I'm on a customer site, I will make note of the time and then look around and say, okay, it's full sun at 3 p.m. in the afternoon type thing. But this site, there was a difference in temperature over the course of, say, 3 feet and a difference in illumination over the course of 3 feet. Right, Dad?
Sure. And you know what, Matt? When you're in the shade as well, of course, because besides temperature and so forth, the leaves are much darker green. I don't know if you ever noticed that.
Agreed.
And you know the reason for that, Matt?
Well, probably because they need to have, are they creating more chlorophyll so that any sun that they get would be able to transfer over into photosynthesis?
Basically, yes. Basically, no. Again, sorry on okay. That one. But so it has to do with chloroplasts, Matthew. And so what the leaves, like you said, are generally larger. They contain more chlorophyll. And it's all to do with absorbing light. If they don't absorb light, then what happens, Lenny?
They don't absorb light. They don't do photosynthesis. They don't make food for themselves.
Okay, so what are they?
What are they? I don't know. The food
they're
is sugar.
They're a parasite.
Oh, they're a parasite. Yes, yes. And they're a fungi.
Fungi would do it, and things like lichens, Matt, liverworts, and so forth. So if you don't make chlorophyll, then you're a parasite. Simple as that. But here's a cool one, Matt.
Now, hold on a second, Dad. Wait a minute. Now, Dad, isn't a parasite just two properties that are side by side? A parasite?
Okay. That is so very bad.
It's wicked. You be quiet. It's fantastic.
Oh,
that
terrible.
May be my finest moment.
No. Okay, Matthew, question for my son. Got
yes, sir.
It? Yep. Coming? It's coming right at you, fast and furious. Are you ready?
Like the Vin Diesel.
What are the most common flower colors in the shade?
Blues.
No.
No.
These color and found in nature is blue.
Sorry, whites.
No, white.
Common flower color is white.
No. It's green, brown, pink.
Well, you said common flower color. Flowers are not green.
In the shade.
What flower is green in the shade?
A lot, actually.
Like?
If you really want to know the truth, there's a lot of floral color in the shade. Most of them are trees. Okay.
But no, you said
shade and partial shade. This is not just sticking to 100% shade, okay? Because partial shade is a biggie as well. And we do a lot of things with that. Okay, so Matt, what are some of the most common things or problems found with people growing various things in the shade or existing in the shade? What are the most common problems?
Well, firstly, if this plant is planted in the wrong location, let's say it's set up for partial sun, the instant you start dealing with shade or partial shade, you're dealing with less blooms, right?
Very good. Yeah.
You're dealing with less blooms.
And what happens if you are taking a sun plant and you're putting it into either a partial shade environment or a shade environment? What happens to the plant itself?
It would shrink.
Okay, and what happens? What shrinks exactly?
The root system.
Well, the root system are already small in the shade to begin with. But what happens is, if you've ever noticed, Matt, if a person's put something in the wrong area, like it was supposed to be a full sun environment, the leaves generally get smaller. There's less bloom. The roots become smaller again, like you had basically had mentioned. But all in all, you could also get, if you're watering properly and so forth, you could also get larger leaves, but no flower at all.
Yes.
So even the color of the flower could change, okay? Or like I said, I told you, less of it. So it's really kind of on the cool side. But most of the time when people overwater, what happens is plants will get something called water stress, okay? So water stress would basically be, you're instead of watering once or twice a week in a shady environment, what you're doing is you're overwatering it. So if you have a sprinkler system going and you're watering every morning, well, all the stuff in the shade does not require to be watered this amount. So you'll get things called water stress.
Hey, Dad.
And then you take...
Dad, let me ask you a question, Dad. Speaking while we're on the topic of water, okay? GrowingSeasonCanada.com, click on Trusted Teammates. Notice on this website, or on this portion of our lovely website, we don't have anything to do with irrigation. Now, here's why I bring this up, and I am not knocking anybody that's in the irrigation industry. Okay?
And if
okay, and if you're making any money in that industry, that's wonderful. I have been on job sites since I was in my mid-teens. Okay, now I say, okay, well, I've been doing this for, say, 25 years. And that's wrong, because I was on job sites from about the age of 10. I'm 42, so theoretically 32 years. Now, as far as professionally, I would say between 15 and 16 years of age is when I started. So you're actually, it's more than 25 years. It would be 27 or 28. Here's my thoughts on irrigation. And this is not coming from somebody that has only seen his own backyard and his neighbor's own backyard. Irrigation does not water well. In fact, the number of times that I have been on a client's site and the plants are in the corner of the bed or whatever, and they're wilting. And I actually recently made a video, and we'll get into this a bit deeper on the other side of the show here, is that
Wait a minute, Matthew, sorry. Sorry, so the plants were wilting. Was it in a shade environment?
It was in a shade environment, and the reason
really?
Is, yeah, and so, but the, and then the, but the customers, I said, listen, this is water damage, or this is lack of water. That their hydrangeas were literally wilting on their stems. And as I made mention on this recent video, I said, one of the first plants, or two of the first plants that are going to show you that they need water first, or are on the front lines of help, we need water, are hydrangeas and ferns. So, her hydrangeas, they were big leaf hydrangeas, and they were wilting on the stems. I said, this is water. And she said, well, but I have irrigation. Ding, there you go. Well, I have irrigation. The number of times that I have heard a client say, but I have irrigation, and there has been water issues, vastly outweighs the number of times that I have heard clients say, well, I water by hand. Here is what's happening. The convenience of irrigation is wonderful, and it's simply a convenience, but they're not getting these shrubs wet like they should be getting them. Absolutely in no way. Dad, you've been involved in this business for over 45 years. You tell me, is your son offside here?
You know what, Matt? What happens is it's generally when they set up the sprinkler system, there's basically, I can't even think of the names anymore because I'm involved in, we're one, okay, zones, that's it.
Yeah.
So one zone, so they're overlap zones, okay? And so what will happen is we're two zones or four zones will overlap. There might be a spot in between that doesn't get any water at all. And, you know, it's because the way it is set up. Or there could be plants, Matthew, that are there
and Dad,
that are actually restricting the amount of water getting to that particular plant.
And, Dad, you are precisely right. You know what? Give that man a cookie because, okay, what he's talking about. So let's say you get this wonderful irrigation put in, and this irrigation head, this little sprinkler head, it's sitting near a, let's pick one that can deal with partial shade. It's sitting next to a Physocarpus Opulus nana. Okay, so that would be a dwarf nine.
Whoa.
Bark, okay,
we're gonna have to put up
there. Yeah, there, and there's a Latin. Okay, there it is. Well, that dwarf nine bark, it's not going to stay at 18 inches in height when you first plant it. It isn't going to stay there. These things grow, and nine barks grow assertively. So let's say you have this little sprinkler head sitting beside your shrub, and that nine bark's like, holy cow, I'm getting some water here. I like it. My feet are all wet and I'm gonna grow. Well, the plant on the other side of that Physocarpus opulus nana is now not getting any water. It was at one point when the little shrub was a certain height, but now that shrub is tripled in size, and that shrub on the other side of it, let's call it a hydrangea, is like, hey, I'm absolutely dying over here. I could really use a shot of water.
Sure, man. And in the end, what happens if you give it too much water, then you start getting diseases like damping off disease or root rot. So people don't realize, but if you take it to the opposite side, there's also lots of shade plants that grow well in a drier environment. That would be things like a stilbe, hosset. Oh, man, you're going to have to load up the show big time, right?
Way to go,
yeah,
me.
I'm sorry, Matt. But they're also so the opposite side. And that is called heat stress. Oh, man, I'm not thinking straight today. But heat stress. So that's basically because you're not giving it enough water. Even if one's plants, like I just mentioned, are able to live in a dry environment. Okay, Matt?
Yeah.
But here's a biggie for you. What is pollinating flowers in the shade? Any idea?
I have the idea. I was wondering, too, like, what is pollinating the flowers? Because bees like to forage in the sun, but bees will pollinate flowers in the shade.
Okay, because so I was going to say slugs. Like, seriously, yeah. Like, legitimately.
What happened,
right?
To munchies on the hosta leaf?
Matt, I heard a lull there, man.
Yeah. No. And that was me thinking, like, there was a breath there. I was staring at the ceiling, because apparently the ceiling is a wonderful place to stare at. For those that haven't tuned into the landline, you'll see some ceiling staring once in a while. The landline is the sister program to The Growing Season, airing on Wednesday night on Facebook, Twitter, as well as YouTube, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on TGS Live, and you can actually see all the episodes of The Landline. You may even see some ceiling staring. It's wonderful. Mine happens to be white. It's a white ceiling, guys.
Okay, Matthew, very good. But you still didn't answer the question. Mom started to answer it. Do you want to let her finish it?
Yes.
Yeah, bees. In fact, all the pollinators will pollinate plants in the shade. Even moths, they'll go to them at night.
So how do you get them in there? Remember, they forage in the sun, so how do you get them in the shade?
I think the fragrance, the shape of the flower.
Okay, so which ones would you pick?
Well, I know one thing that I learned just recently is that bees love hosta flowers, and they grow in the shade. So people, please don't cut down your hosta flowers until they're completely dead and it's just a stem. They love them. They also like a stilby. They'll go for a stilby. I'm sure any flower that has like a landing pad for the bee, so your impatiens, your begonias, yeah, they'll pollinate those.
And
who takes over the night shift?
The moths.
Oh,
the moths take over the night shift, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they're just not useless little bugs that gather around lights. No, they are the night shift for pollinating. Now, are they as good as bees and butterflies? No.
Okay, big question. Wait a minute.
They do it.
How do they find the flowers at night?
They use contrast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, their eyes can see contrast, and they especially see is yellow.
Yeah.
Well, yep.
Yeah.
You know, I have a question. Or an observation. Do you remember the movie True Lies?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, mm-hmm. And the villains in True Lies were from a certain area of the world, and members of that community were pretty upset at the depiction of those characters in the movie, right?
Yes.
Okay, so here's my question for you then. Nobody spoke up for the moths when they were depicted a certain way in Silence of the Lambs, right? Who was speaking up for the moths? There was no moth.
Nobody.
There was no moth group out there saying, wait a second, we don't appreciate being linked to some crazed serial killer, right?
Yeah, I know, Matt. You know what, Matt? There's a lot of insects out there, let's face it, that are doing way more work for us than anybody realized. They're not just a big pain in the, you know what, because they actually help out us and the environment. So moths are kind of important because they are our night shift, and, you know, give them some space and appreciation, right?
And you know what?
I didn't know that about moths at all until recently.
Yeah, I second that. Man, some of these moths can be big, like really big. Like we saw one last year, it was ailing, but we saw one on the way to the bus stop. Dad, Mom, this thing had to be 3 inches long.
Wow, that's big.
Big, like we're talking, that thing would take off and you would feel it. Like it had engines.
You know what, Matthew? In the end, again, appreciation. Okay, I know you had a real run-in earlier in the season with our little friend, the Gypsy Moth.
No, yeah, those things can go
but,
straight
to
hell.
But, you know, for the most part, you know, the butterflies are sleeping. And if you're a monarch, your brain's in your chest. So you're not exactly the smartest thing in the world. But moths are doing their job, so let them be. Here's a biggie, Maddie, for you. Okay, do you think that flower color on the petals is affected by pH, soil pH?
Yes.
Can I do? Why?
Well, because you see it in hydrangeas. If you add horticultural aluminum to it, or if you start to mess with the pH of it, you can change your hydrangea from pink to blue to purple. Sorry, from pink to blue to white.
Yes, and again, kind of no. Okay, the fact of the matter is that it's to do with the plant's genes that are being altered to change, okay, into a particular color. It's a mix of pigments going on, okay?
Yeah.
The natural pH within the plant cells, for example, really do not affect the flower's color very much. It could also be affected by heat, or it could also be affected by the age of the bloom. But in the case of hydrangea, it's one of those rare birds where it is basically one of the ones out there that really do have a tendency to change color. But you go on, you look at other plants, there's not a lot of them that will do that. But most of the time, it's just a mix of pigments, or it could be something to do with the pH balance within the cells of the plants themselves. So in the end, Matt, it's not mostly pH. It's just what the plant does.
And contrary to popular belief, pigments are not the candies that a swine eats, right?
I have no idea.
No, they aren't.
No, I tell you, Matthew, again, super.
Come on.
Week.
That is really good material right there.
No.
Okay. So
it actually kind of stinks, Matthew.
No.
Anyways, yes, Matt, we got to move.
Yes.
How many minutes we got left here?
We are actually going to take a quick break here. On the other side, I have a quick question about bees, or your opinion about bees, because we made mention of them, and then we're going to jump into some recommendations. She's Lynn, he's Jack, I'm Matt, and I'm going to enjoy a mint with my little piggy friend here, oink, oink. And this is the growing season right here on News Talk, it's like 9:60 a.m.
That is really bad.
We're back. And if you didn't laugh at that pigment joke, you don't have a soul. Right, Dad?
It's cute, Matthew.
Dad, just a quick question for you. And this is simply an opinion question. But we've been out on a lot of sites this year. Is it me, or has the honeybee population increased?
You know what, Matthew? I think you're right.
Yep.
I think I've seen a lot more of them this year
I've seen a lot more too, Matthew.
You think so? Yep. Mom, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I know. I see a lot. I still look after one garden site, and I've seen a lot more at that garden.
Because I know for us, like on sites, we've been on many sites now, whether it be for consults or installs this year, and we have seen a whole heck of a lot more. And again, it could be me. It could simply be, you know, every year is the hottest year that my dad has ever remembered, or every winter is the snowiest, right? So maybe it's just me. I'm 42, and it's like, this is the most bees I've ever seen until next year, when that year will be the most bees I've ever seen, right? But I am sure of it, that there are more bees on sites, for sure.
I think we're more aware of the bees and how important they are. And I don't think our first thing is, when we see a bee, is we want to swat it and kill it. It's more like, hello, friend, and thank you for pollinating the plants, making the food I eat, and we leave them alone.
Now,
we respect them.
The other thing too, Mom, and I think that your point is very, very well stated. The other thing too that I've seen so much of this year is clients are really interested in doing their part, however small it is, when it comes to creating a home for insects. We've heard more about milkweed this year. In fact, we were on a client site and there was wild milkweed growing. And as we were ripping some of it out, because it had overtaken an area, the client was like, oh, make sure, can you leave a little bit just for the monarchs? I have not heard that until this year.
Do you know, besides the monarchs, do you know what you said? Okay, so yesterday when you were here doing work on the patio and you noticed there was a wasp came into the house, right?
Yep.
Okay, so it was flying around, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, in the past I would have just said right away, just kill the thing or, you know, put it outside, grab it or whatever. So in the end, I did kill it, okay? And I felt kind of bad, because I'm thinking, even though they don't pollinate, like, say, your typical honeybee, I thought, why am I? I shouldn't really be killing this thing. I should try to catch it and then release it outside, because it does help. So you know what, Matt? I think people's way of looking at things is becoming more and more important. And I think, as far as the bees concerned, I think we're actually starting to respect them more.
You know what you should have done, Dad? You should have taken that wasp outside and you should have gently planted it on one of the Austrian pines that you are responsible for inserting into the ground across the GTA.
Oh, you're bad. You're really bad.
So I have a quick little Austrian pine story. So my son, Logan, for our audience, I have a six-year-old son named Logan, Logan Thomas McFarlane. He's the most wonderful little gentleman. And then my daughter, Emily Virginia McFarlane, named after my grandmother, is the complete opposite. She's a wonderful little lady, but she's a fireball, crazy. So my son has listened to our show. If you haven't tuned in, we did a show a couple weeks back called Aircraft Carriers, which is our, Battleships, which is our slang for large evergreen trees. And the one segment of the show was rife with references to the Austrian pine, the most wicked, awful, nasty, horrendously awful choice for a evergreen tree that you can put on your property. And my dad is responsible for its proliferation across the greater Toronto area. And my son listened to it. So we're out walking and he goes, "Dad, is that an Austrian pine?" And I look up and it's, it's typical. It's like probably 30 years old and it's like sap leaking all over a place. It's got tip
half light, dead,
half dead, right? Needles everywhere. And I said, "Yeah, that's an Austrian pine." And he goes, "Grandpa, what was he thinking?" I love it.
You're so bad, Matthew.
I love it.
So Matt, I'm sorry to say that in the end, we're going back to shade for a second.
Yep.
You need to use something like a 10-10-10 fertilizer because they don't really need as much nutrient because in the shade everything is a little bit slower as far as growth and so forth. But here's the interesting thing. When anything that generally grows in the shade, the leaves are larger, flatter, and so forth because they want to collect light energy. Okay, so that's super important. And if you ever notice, Matt, that generally the leaves themselves are actually right on the end of the stems themselves. And again, that's to get closer and get more access to energy, light energy. And that's important, Matt. Otherwise, you don't get much going on. And if you ever notice, Matt, I don't know if you've seen this, there's generally not as many blooms in the shade as there are in the sun.
No, agreed. Agreed. And this is a big challenge. Wonderful segue, Pops. Great job. This is why you are Yoda. Yes. By the way, speaking of Star Wars, if you haven't watched The Mandalorian, do yourself a favor and get Disney Plus. And the new season of The Mandalorian, so season 2, debuts October the 30th on Disney Plus. It's wonderful. If you haven't seen it yet, do yourself a favor. But this is one of the big questions and concerns when you're dealing with a property that's got a lot of shade is how do you get color? We go on and on about something called four season interest. And what that means is every season, your garden should have something in that garden that is either flowering or providing an interest that it wasn't, say, providing in the previous season. This is precisely why we do not plant burning bushes, because they are lazy, lazy, lazy. Okay. All they do in the fall is they turn red. The rest of the year, they're just this blob. Okay. But the number one concern is how do you get color in the shade when Pops just said this? Yoda just said, "No blooms in shade." Yes. Okay. So I do that on the fly. But the point is that yes, things bloom less in the shade. So we have some recommendations here. If you do have a shade situation as to what to plant in said situation that will give you yes blooms. Okay, but also give you four season interest, something happening in every season. Now, when we deal with the winter season here that dominates, 4 to 5 months in southern Ontario, obviously, if the choices that we're making are deciduous or perennial, you're not going to see those, okay? So obviously in the winter, you'd have to be dealing with shade evergreens, which sounds like a completely ridiculous thing to say, but Dad, yews are one that is a wonderful choice for a shade evergreen, correct?
Sure. And I think that's one of your favorites, isn't it, Matt? Which yew is your favorite?
I like the clipped yews, otherwise called the Japanese yew. And it's a conical shape. So it naturally wants to grow like a cone. It's like a little evergreen tree. But part of the reason why I like it is it's a slow grower. So you're not going to get crazy amounts of excessive aggressive growth on this thing. B, it can tolerate a fair amount of shade. Dad, would you even go so far as to say full shade?
Man, it's 4 hours or less, so that's just over the full shade environment. Yeah. But you know what, Matt? For the most part, again, it takes a well-drained soil. But the one of the main problems with any of the yews is what, Matt?
Well, first of all, the cost of these things. If you are going to be getting involved in an evergreen, you're dealing with the most expensive evergreen shrub, anyway, on the market would be the yew. And I think part of it is just that it's so user-friendly and so easy to deal with that you have to pay for that sort of convenience, right?
Sure. And do you have any idea why would I be asking you some of the negative things about yews?
Well, first of all, yews are super popular. My dad in the 1980s, he was planting Austrian pines as well as yews all across the GTA. This segment was brought to you by Blue Jay Landscaping. Yews and Austrian pines. But the problem is that the yew berries and many parts of the yew are poisonous. So if
you very good.
Yeah, look at that. Hey, the kids learning. I'm also making rocks levitate. My daughter just actually levitated by. I'm actually suspending her using the power of my mind. But the issue is that if you have small children and animals, pets, the berries on these yews in quantities can be poisonous. There can be death as a result.
It would take 50 grams of basically any part of that yew, Matt, to poison you. And again, how much 50 grams is, I do not know.
Yeah.
But the idea, Matt, is that it is a toxic alkaloid chemical. And they say A and B there because it's a taxine, A and B. But in the end, Matt, there's approximately 10 different ones. And A and B is just two of them. And it would cause something like cardiogenic shock. Okay, so it doesn't sound good. Anything to do with the heart, I don't want to know about.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing. And I didn't know this, even knew this, Matt. What is the fruit on a yew called?
Berries.
No. It's a drupe.
Oh, yeah.
And you know all about droops, right?
That's right. Well, yeah. As you get older, as you get older, things really begin to droop. Now, my use of the force is not strong enough that I can mask the drooping. Now, my father, his droop would be long, but with the ability to use the force, he just keeps things suspended. It's sort of like an outdoor hernia, right?
Oh, jeez. No. But for our listeners out there who don't know what a droop is,
yeah, that's what happens when you get older. You get droopy.
Is what, Lynn? A droop is a fleshy fruit with a thin skin and a central... It's not that funny, Jack. I'm describing it. A droop is a fleshy fruit with a thin skin and a central stone containing the seed.
So examples of droops are plums, cherries, almonds are droop, even an olive, Matt. So those olives you were eating yesterday at lunch, they're droops.
So are you.
Ladies and gentlemen, for those that wonder where I get my sense of humor from, and my dad does a great job at masking it and trying to be slightly refined. He has the mind of a 7-year-old boy, right? Come on. Like, the instant you start thinking about drooping, we're not thinking about, you know, your tropical plant inside, its leaves are drooping because they're wilting. He's thinking about, in any event. So we've mentioned yews. As far as great selections for, we've basically talked about almost full shade, but partial shade, a yew is a wonderful option. Now, it's going to sting you in the wallet or in the bank account because yews are pricey, but what you're getting is a very maintenance, almost maintenance-free, user-friendly, huh? It's user-friendly, huh? Look at that, right? Okay.
Why are yews so expensive, Matthew?
It takes them a long time to grow.
Age. You're paying for age, yeah?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, you see that, like, I put two clipped Japanese yews on a client's site and this past season, and they were 3.5 feet tall, and the client asked me how old these things were. I said, I don't know, probably 12 to 15 years. What?
Right on. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
I said, these things, now, once they get established, once they get themselves going, then they tend to have a bit more of a growth spurt, but it's getting them there, right?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Now, we've mentioned the yews. Who wants to make a recommendation next? Is it me? Is it mom? Is it dad? Who's going next?
You know what, Matt? I think Mom should hit annuals for a minute.
Go for it, Mom.
Yeah, I can hit the annuals. I like the tuberous begonia.
Okay. Yep.
I think it's very pretty. It's got a very large flower. It goes in colors right. It can be white. It runs right through to red, and there's yellows, there's corals, there's orange. I really like them, and they give a real pop in the shade.
This is interesting to me too. That Dad, would this thing be a perennial somewhere?
Sure, absolutely. I'm not exactly sure where it comes from, but I would say yes in any place that doesn't get super cold over the winter. But you know what, Matt? One of my biggest hates about it is, again, it's problems with damping off disease. If you water too much,
yeah,
the thing will break off right at the ground height, like where it touches the ground. And that's what I dislike about it the most. The colors are great, and they have ones that are fantastic for putting in hanging baskets and so forth. And I like them very much. And the dark green leaves, I like. And it's almost got like a hairy thing going on. But I don't mind
them. Is it drooping, Dad? Is it hairy and drooping?
It's not drooping. But you know what, Matt? They're good in groups, single specimens, or even, you know, for accents, and containers or pots as well. So, because we use them ourselves on one of the last projects that we have in Brampton.
Yeah, shout out to Bill and Carol Danbrook, by the way, who are listening right now. Yeah, we use a lot of tuberous begonias there. But what I find interesting, Dad, is this would be, in a different climate, this would be a perennial. It would be something that would come back every year. And yet, it can't handle too much sunlight or heat because we have to plant it in shade here. But in the climate that it would be a perennial, would be generally a climate that would have more heat and sunshine, right?
Sure, and again, they would have to have it protected in the heat of the afternoon. Okay, so it would need some sort of a dappled thing going on, either from trees around it or the plants in that are actually existing around it as well. So, you know, it needs some sort of afternoon protection, and that's the idea. So we actually plant them in part shade and so forth, but even in as much as into full shade. But Matt, you know what? Over the years, I planted a lot of impatiens.
Yep.
And I gave up on them because, number one, I don't think they give you a lot of bloom for your buck. And I switched over to the actual, let me think here for a second, the fibrous begonias, okay? And I found that I didn't run into things with this heat stress or water stress thing going on.
Now, Dad, what about the New Guinea impatiens?
Sure. New Guineas are fine as well.
Yep.
But again, I even find New Guineas have less bloom as well.
Yeah.
But what I found in the end was I used to love to have a bit of yellow to make it pop, or orange to make it pop in a shade garden or semi-shade garden. And I don't know if you knew this, Matthew, but yellow in impatiens was very uncommon to come across. Like, there wasn't very many out there. They tried them over the years, and yellow was not something that you would normally find in an impatiens. But about 3, 4, 5 years ago, they came up with something called Fusion Yellow Glow, and it's an impatiens, and it's got a buttery yellow flower with an orange center, and it's pretty as hell.
You know,
but
what?
Again, would I?
I don't like impatiens. I don't like impatiens, no, because I hate waiting for them. Right?
You're impatient. Yeah, but Matt, I found that the fibrous begonias was a much better option because they are native to, say, the tropical, subtropical areas as well. But and you grew them in your cooler, shady areas of your garden. But did you ever notice that, say, New Guineas and fibrous begonias have a bronze tinge to their leaves?
Yes.
What happens?
Well, so like those leaves, they get slimy, right?
No, and you know what? They take more sunlight. They seem to take more sunlight for some
reason.
Really? Yeah, and I think it's probably something to do with collect and reflect again. But Matt, I don't know if you've used them that much. You've gone out with me and done a lot of flower planting, but I found them that the fibrous begonias were great for borders, along walkways,
yeah,
along up against patios. So Matt, in the end, they're fantastic in containers or pots, and that's one of the reasons I use them.
Absolutely love this thing. Mom, hit me up with some balloon flower facts.
It's a great little flower. It's a great flower. It makes a blue flower, and the reason it's called balloon flower is before the flower actually blooms, the bud swells like a balloon.
Yes.
It's really cool to look,
yeah,
at. And it will thrive in sun or partial shade. It likes well-drained, slightly acidic soil. It will tolerate dry conditions, but then it turns around and says it likes plenty of moisture. It's a cold, hardy plant, and it prefers cooler conditions in summer, like we have them here in our shade bed.
Yeah, and I have them out front. Now, my front yard gets sun from, I would say, probably noon to 4 o'clock. So I've got about 4 hours of direct sunlight. But after that, it's basically partial shade. These things, guys, these platycodons, these balloon flower, have been blooming all summer long. If you deadhead them, if you basically pinch off the spent blooms. Within days, another one will come back to take its place. They're absolutely the best bang for your buck you can buy.
And they're blue, which is a rare color in nature.
Yeah.
So they really stand
out. Whoa.
Yeah. Love it.
I listen.
Yep. I know. Now, we're not going to talk about hosta because we can save that for the landline. The other one, too, that people mention a whole lot of is astilbe when it comes to color and shade. Now, here's my issue with astilbe is that it doesn't really do a whole heck of a lot besides the bloom. And after the bloom's done, it looks kind of like garbage, right? it has this spent sort of a browned off looking bloom on it. And it just sits there. In fact, one of the sites that I was recently visiting for a console, full shade, and out front, she's got this lovely mass it's a mass planting of astilbe. And all of them have bloomed out. And they're all looking like just a complete dumpster fire because they got these little frickin' browned off seed heads up top. And it just looks like, oh, look at this. It's the parade of death. Look at this. It's just lovely. Right?
Do you know what, Matt? In the end, you've got to plant more than one variety. That's the key if you really want these things to give you much of a length of floral show. But, Matt, in the end, I said that a couple
twice.
Times.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, sorry, Matty. But I was almost ready to say it again.
Yeah.
So, but, Matt, they are one of the best we talk about dry shade.
Yes.
And this is one of the ones that would be near the top of the list next to our little friend, the hosta.
Right.
So they take dry shade. So, Matt, here's a biggie for you. If you were going to pick something that was a flowering shrub, deciduous, which one would you choose for the shade?
Oh, this is easy. Hydrangea.
Forget the hydrangea. We've done that one to death. Give me another one.
Oh, okay. No problem. Japanese caria. Double flowering Japanese rose. Well, Japanese caria, first of all, Japanese caria, it flowers one of the earliest on these things. Secondly, no flower on this thing looks like this on a flowering shrub, with the exception of these look like marigold flowers. They look like little puffballs on the flower. And these flowers are on the branches all the way up. They're not just on the tips. It's on the branches all the way up, as well as in the wintertime, its bark is highlighter neon green. Nothing looks like this thing. Dad?
Sure. And Matt, you call them pom-poms or something, or I call them pom-poms.
Puffballs,
you call them, what was it, marigolds.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that even right now, Matt, I put mine out in basically full sun. And it's still blooming right now. And I think it's fantastic. And they bloom right into the late summer and so forth. And it'll require a lot of pruning. And this is the thing. People don't want to have something out there that they're having to work at all the time to get any sort of floral color out of it, right?
This would be one, if you wanted to create a garden area for four-season interest, this would be one to plant near a red osier or an Arctic fire dogwood. Because you'd have the blazing red of the dogwood bark in the winter, accompanied nearby by the highlighter neon lime green of the bark on the Japanese caria. Just gorgeous.
Sure.
Absolutely. And actually, dogwood will take shade too, as well. So there
sure.
you go. Right?
But because it bloom on a dogwood is a bract, right? On the,
yep. Yep.
And so the bloom is not quite as reliant on, say, the sunlight to, you know, do its thing, okay? So, Matt, if I was going to pick something that was a broadleaf evergreen, what do you think mine would be? Any idea?
A broadleaf evergreen for full shade?
Yep.
Talking about cotoneaster?
Nope.
What?
Nope. Oregon grape, Mahonia aquifolium.
Oh, cool. Okay, why?
Yeah. Because it's an interesting broadleaf shrub. It grows in the shadiest spots in your garden. And I like the fact that it originally came from here, from North America. And it, you know what, Matt? I didn't know if any of our listeners knew this. It's also the state flower of Oregon.
I did not know that.
And it's got color throughout all four seasons. So it's green, it has a burgundy foliage, it has yellow flowers, and it has a purplish-blue fruit in the fall. Almost looks like a blueberry on it. Mom's got her finger up, Matt.
Jack, does it grow around here? Because we're familiar with it out west, but it will grow here?
Oh, sure. I put it in the gardens. It does fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. Ladies and gents, that is a wonderful way to stop. And as usual, we didn't get to nearly the amount of information that we wanted to. However, follow along with us, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on Show Bits. That's your visual accompaniment to the show. My guess is that you're probably already using it, but it bears repeating. As well as if you'd like to have us on site, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on TGS, Tiny Gardens, or Contact. Either way gets you to me, and we can book a consult. It appears as though the consult interest for the fall season is really, really busy. It is insane. I have been doing multiple Sundays in a row where I've got two and three consults back to back to back. Wonderful. And we're also seeing the expansion of our breadth into other parts of the GTA that I had not anticipated, which is also wonderful. Mom, Dad, thank you so much for joining us. What were your thoughts? We feel that the droop conversation was one of was one of note, right? Yes. It was droopy.
Oh,
Is there a joke out there, and we want to end on a joke? In fact, wait a second. I think am I on the hook for the joke this week? Is this?
I think
true?
You are. You're the big time for the
really?
Joke.
Should we be setting this up where we have it where there's like a rotation? Where
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. All right. This is a good one, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. And again, many thanks to Mom and Dad, because we know how this whole thing ends. Jack generally ends it off. So this is a wonderful time to say thanks, Mom and Dad, for joining us today. Here is your joke. Check this out. Three guys. Let's try that again. Three guys. Yes, three guys. Three guys break down in the middle of a desert. I'm not sure why they're guys. They can be females as well. The first one says he'll take the hood off to use for shade. The second one says he'll take the radiator because he can drink the water left in it. The third guy says, well, he'll take the door. So if he gets hot, he simply just has to roll the window down.
Oh,
geez. Wow.
It's really bad. Jack out.
If you miss any part of our show today or any of our earlier broadcasts, don't panic. Just log on to our website at www.saga960am.ca/podcasts and look for and stream our podcasts of this show and any of our other great programs.